It's a Cartoon Revolution. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Sonia.
Why Cartoon Revolution?
Because the cartoons we love aren't just for kids anymore.
Cartoons have something to say and change to inspire, and we're here to break it down for you.
Whether it's anime or Pixar, 2D or CG.
Join us as we take cartoons too seriously and discover their hidden meanings and revolutionary ideas.
Hello.
Hello. La 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 la. Do you hear a difference in our sounds?
Do you hear a difference in our sounds?
Ooh, special new microphones.
What? Hopefully they can actually tell a difference.
Oh, I believe in our listeners. Okay, so just before we begin, we do have an announcement that we have Twitter now. For people who like Twitter, what's their handle, Sonia?
That is @cartoonrev_pod.
Awesome.
So unfortunately, our name was just too big for Twitter to handle. So it is cartoonrev_pod.
They do like to limit the characters.
I know. I believe we have a listener comment, right, from last month's episode. So if you haven't seen it, go check out our episode on Arcane, which is still probably my favorite show of 2021. So this is a comment from Pandamazing, and they say, have you seen the music video for Enemy? So that's the intro song for Arcane. I feel like the show would have benefited from showing the parts of their childhood from the video. Like, for example, being searched by enforcers or the children playing and arguing in the bedroom. I feel like it adds more to Powder's motivation to become Jinx, which has me confused by the end. They could have even just thrown the video in there. Haha. Other parts definitely felt like music videos. I definitely agree. I think this show has a very music video vibe, and integrating that would have been really interesting for the official music video for Enemy. Deidre, did you have any thoughts?
I remember seeing this comment, and because of that, I looked into the music video, which I hadn't done before. And in my head, I was like, I like Jinx's story, blah, 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 whatever. And I watched the music video, and I mean, it's still Jinx's story, but it does add so much more context. And even the relationship between Echo and Jinx and why they would have this childhood competitive background to their story, which I think was better explained, and they could have really fleshed that out. Because I felt like some of the scenes, even though people weren't talking, were really important to that character development as Powder.
Yeah, that's really cool. Thank you so much for reaching out, Pandamazing. If anyone else ever wants to share a comment, you can always just comment on any of our social media posts. You can always email us. We would be happy to hear what you guys want to say and share it with everyone else.
Yeah, and it doesn't even need to be fully fleshed paragraphs. Like, just send us questions, send us observations or whatever.
Yeah. So Deidre, what have you got for us today? I'm really excited.
So I decided I wanted to go way back, and we had this discussion about cross-platform branding, right? That's what we were talking about in the Arcane episode. So this got me thinking about Pokemon Indigo League, OG Pokemon, way back when, 1997.
And that's like the ultimate example of cross-branding, you know, video games, shows, merchandise, expansive world. I love it. I'm so excited.
And especially as 90s kids, right? This is our bread and butter. And I really wanted to talk about, just as someone going into the environmental field and being interested in animals as my gateway drug, quote unquote, maybe that's not a good way to put it. But anyway, my gateway into that field is that Pokemon was one of the ways that inspired me, and I had a real connection with, even though as an adult looking back, is it the best representation of people's relationship with nature? There's been a lot of controversy and debate about
question,
that.
Deidre. Very bold.
So yeah, let's get into that.
I'll just share my experience with Pokemon. I mean, that was literally my childhood. I remember every day after school, my brother and I would immediately run to the television and turn it on for the 4 p.m. new episode or whatever. And it was just so exciting. I remember they would always have the who's that Pokemon kind of theme or whatever, and we'd always guess it and be so excited. And then it evolved later to maybe when we were in fifth grade or something, we got our first games, which for me was Pokemon Diamond. Legend, which is to this day my favorite. And since then, I have played almost every single mainstream Pokemon game, including Pokemon Go, of course. So that's definitely the perspective I'll bring to this and just why I'm so excited to talk about this topic today, because it's definitely so foundational to my childhood and also my gateway, I would say, into anime.
Yeah, and maybe I'll clarify that I do have a soft spot for the English dub of this show. I felt like some of the voice acting was pretty great. And
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And maybe some of the translation choices weren't the best, but whatever.
That's what makes it special, though. The goofiness of it, the ridiculousness of Jesse and James, the voice acting.
Oh, they're great.
It's just, it's part of the whole package.
Yeah. So maybe I'll start really quickly on Pokemon background. I'm sure a lot of people know already, but just in case, it's a property that started actually with the game, not with the TV show. It was Pocket Monsters Red and Green in 1996 by Satoshi Taiji, who was himself an amateur entomologist when he was a little youngin running around in the woods, and he wanted to share the joy of being outside and that fun with kids who didn't have access to natural environments, so especially like urban kids. And so he wanted to make that into a game experience. And Pokemon itself is about this 10-year-old boy who goes on a quest with his Pokemon, his little Pikachu. And in order to become Pokemon master, he needs to catch other Pokemon and train them and go on his way. I think when we talk about this, we're going to be talking about Pokemon as how it relates to real world animals and nature in this discussion. But there's a big discussion between Pokemon. Are they animals or are they kami, which is a Shinto, they're like Shinto deities that hold these natural powers. So people say that you can't have a direct comparison because Pokemon are not supposed to be animals.
So kami, are those like similar to in Pompoko episode, like the different animals there that were also kind of spirits?
Kami, I think, are supposed to be a level up. So
gotcha.
Instead, they're more like Amaterasu, which is the, was it the moon goddess? And so they're higher in deities. And the Taiji did say that Pokemon are supposed to have this relationship with the kami, where the kami need to test the people to see if that they're worthy in order to work together. And this is tied into this larger Shinto belief of nature and humans working together.
Very interesting. Yeah. I mean, it almost sounds like minor deities almost, which I never would have really expected to be compared to Pokemon, because I always kind of envisioned them as animals, with the exception of maybe the legendary Pokemon, which seemed like deities in a lot of ways. And in a lot of the games and shows, they are kind of venerated as deities. But imagining your average Bidoof or Pidgey as a minor deity is a bit of a struggle for me.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Even though the founder or the creator did say that this is what they're based on, there are so many Pokemon that are obviously based on kami, but also mostly Pokemon based on animals that we know.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And Japanese audiences will have the context of the Shinto religion is an understanding Pokemon, but everyone else will associate them most closely with animals, which is what we've seen, which is why I think it's still worth having this conversation, because I know I viewed it that way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it also helps, I guess, explain why we think about Pokemon kind of like pets or partners who journey with us, fight on our behalf, who are our friendships and companions, and visualizing them as kind of like animals or pets, or more like animals. It's a bit easier to imagine equal partnership in that way than a minor deity or a kami that seems a bit more spiritual.
Right, exactly. And really quickly, some examples is Drowsy. You know that Drowsy, the tapir.
Yeah.
Hypnotic Pokemon, and the thing is super cute. So yeah, inspired by tapir, but also by Baku, which is a Shinto spirit that has this trunk. He has tusks, actually, and there's similarities there. But in terms of inspired by real animals, then we have Caterpie, which if you look at the picture of an Eastern tiger swallowtail caterpillar, they look almost exactly the same. They even have this thing in front of their face, I guess like the antennae.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
That looks the same. It's pretty cool. So
yeah,
they're
yeah.
in there.
That, yeah. I can definitely see, you know, obviously Pidgey, it's hard to imagine it as not just being inspired by pigeons.
Yeah. I mean, there's almost 1,000 Pokemon now. They're not going to be getting their inspiration from just one place. And sometimes they get it from other mythologies as well.
Right. Like I was thinking one of the newer Pokemon is called Copper Raja, and it's pretty weird, but it's basically an Indian elephant. I don't know if it's supposed to be inspired by some South Asian or Hindu deity. Like it could be Ganesh, but I think it's just an average elephant. But it's interesting that they've branched out and include the world's animals and mythologies as opposed to just Japan.
So they got inspiration for Pokemon everywhere. But I have a question for you really quickly. So I know that normally, I guess the first question people would ask would be, what's your starter Pokemon, Charmander, Squirtle, or Bulbasaur? Really quickly, what is that?
My first ever was Bulbasaur, so that's got to be my answer. And also my first game ever was Turtwig, so grass.
Oh, you're a leaf type.
I guess so. I got dragged for it a lot as a kid. I don't know why all the bullies were, no, Charmander and fire is the best, blah, 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 whatever. But I don't know, grass sustains us. They're actually pretty strong. What can I say?
Yeah, I love grass Pokemon too. So that kind of reminds me of the debate of what's it called? Oh, elements. Always want to be fire or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. My real question is,
hit me.
Yeah. So you are a Pokemon trainer. You've already caught a bunch of Pokemon. Now you're going on a new quest. You can only take one of your Pokemon with you on this next leg of the journey. One Pokemon. What would you choose?
Only one Pokemon, any Pokemon I can take. Ooh, no, I could, including legendaries.
No.
No? Okay. I would probably take something like Gyarados because it's strong, but also can fly and swim, which I feel like is useful if you're about to go on a journey. But my heart would probably say something else, like Turtwig.
Wait, Gyarados can fly?
It's a water flying type, which is crazy. It's supposed to be kind of like a dragon. So you would imagine to be water dragon, but it's a water flying type, which means it's super susceptible to electric attacks. But it also can, I mean, should be able to fly. I'm assuming you can learn the move fly if it's a flying type, but yeah.
Okay, see, this is the difference. I'm so into like the old shows. And then obviously you have updated information that I don't have.
So I just Googled it, and apparently this is a hotly contested debate as to whether Gyarados can fly or not. But I'm going to say if he's a flying type, he can fly. I don't really see how without wings, but he's a flying type.
Hey, 70 to 80% of the world is water, so a swimming type Pokemon.
Either way,
would make
strong
sense.
Choice in my opinion. I'm not too worried about it. What about you?
I have a much less serious Pokemon in mind. That's I have a really soft spot for Lickitung.
Which, oh my God.
I think it's just, I mean, this is a terrible reason. I think it is just cutest, silliest Pokemon that can paralyze other Pokemon. And it was in the show only for like a few episodes because it was a one note Pokemon. But just as a companion, I think a Lickitung would be really fun.
I think that just fits your personality so well. Me, I'm the one who's just strength, adventure, perfect utility. Meanwhile, you're just, what is the most ridiculous Pokemon that makes me laugh and smile? That's such a good insight to both of our characters. I love it so much. So in terms of thinking of Pokemon as pets, right? And the relationship between trainer and pet, because that's kind of what we're most interested in today and what's really interesting about Pokemon in general. What do you think is what the show and the games, I suppose, say is the relationship between a trainer and a Pokemon? And how is there a real life comparison that we can make there?
Yeah, I think there's different ways you can interpret this. And if we look at just the TV show and just face value, they're always saying that Pokemon are partners, Pokemon are friends that you go on these adventures with, and you need to earn trust both ways in order to succeed in your goals, and you need to be hardworking and all those things. Be friends with your Pokemon and they'll be great partners to you.
I think that's one of the central themes of the entire franchise, something that probably unites all of the games, all of the media, all of the TV shows, is a lot of the villains and even rivals tend to be people who abuse the relationship with a Pokemon or treat them as less than, with the exception of, I think, Jesse and James. They're not that evil. They're more ridiculous, but there are other villains and other teams, for example, like all of them, like Team Rocket, Team Galactic, and in the games where they're trying to suck the power out of some legendary Pokemon or capture mythical Pokemon or just hurt Pokemon in general and have some mythos to their whole existence that pits Pokemon as against each other in a way that makes them lesser and hurts them, thus paints the opposite, which is us, our viewers and heroes and trainers, as people who do care about the well-being of Pokemon, who want to treat them well, who treat them as partners. But of course, there's the central issue of, well, they are kind of sending them to fight against other Pokemon. And so how does that shape up? How does that argument finish if that's what we're doing with our own Pokemon?
Right. And this is the other side of that, is that in this friendship togetherness, in order to attain the goal that Ash has and that a lot of other trainers have, which is to become a Pokemon master, they have to catch a bunch of Pokemon, train them, and then fight them with other people's Pokemon. And I essentially do think this is more about money and the gamification of it as opposed to the ethics of fighting animal. It's kind of like cockfighting and dogfighting, I would think.
Yeah, like, right. I remember there was this huge controversy when I was sometime middle school or high school, I don't know. There was some football player who was caught, I think, making pit bulls fight each other or something like that. And it got a lot of press and people were just really disgusted by that. And obviously Pokemon is not real, but it is what's still kind of happening.
Yeah, it's fighting animals with each other. It's not that uncommon, even though it's looked down upon in a lot of places.
So something that I think maybe Nintendo has gotten more conscious of this as they're making new games, but they've developed a new mechanic in a lot of the newer games, or really actually not even that new. Like I think Diamond, which was one of the first ones I ever played and must have come out, I don't know, the late 2000s or mid 2000s. They have what's called a friendship factor for Pokemon. And there are certain Pokemon that you can't evolve unless you reach a high friendship level with it. So examples include Ryolu, which evolves into Lucario. And there's one more I'm forgetting. Oh, Munchlax, which evolves into Snorlax. So basically they had all these like cool baby Pokemon that came out in that game and they turn into really powerful Pokemon, but they're really hard to train. Like they're not very good when they start out, and to make them strong, you have to develop a strong bond with them. So that's where I see Nintendo maybe starting to reframe or respond to criticism around its treatment of animals or Pokemon and really promote the idea of friendship and bonding and in terms of generating value from a partner. And I've seen this in newer versions of the game too. So I think in both Sword and Shield and maybe Alola too, the Sun and Moon games, as well as Pokemon Go, all of those have some sort of mechanic to feed or pet or play with your Pokemon. And that, of course, also increases your friendship, which then increases the ability of the Pokemon as well. And so these are things that were not at all present, as far as I'm aware, in the original games. But you can kind of see how it factors a little bit in the show as a means of promoting that friendship.
Yeah. And what about the particular episodes where we see this, right? We, throughout the TV show, we have recommended watching for people listening, but I feel like there's so many episodes where it establishes that people and Pokemon are in this together, even with all the catching and the hard training and everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's the one that you told me to watch was Pikachu's Goodbye. Really cute episode. Oh my gosh, where the team comes across just, a Pikachu colony, a giant herd of Pikachu. I don't know what qualifier you would call a plurality of Pikachu, but a group of Pikachu. And of course, our Pikachu has a lot of fun with them and befriends them. And Ash decides that he's going to leave Pikachu behind because he thinks that Pikachu's happier with them. And of course, his ability to make that choice that is very selfless and thoughtful, that prioritizes his Pokemon or his partner's well-being over his own, is a really beautiful thing to see and indicates how much Ash cares about his relationship with his Pokemon and genuinely cares about their well-being. And of course, Pikachu decides, no, I'm going to stay with you. Why would you leave me? But that was a great example. There's so many like that where where Ash is just displays his love and genuine affection for his Pokemon, his care for their well-being. And that's definitely worthy of respect and worthy of learning from.
Yeah. And I was surprised when I learned this, but he's supposed to be a 10-year-old boy.
I know.
Yeah. So he acts really immature a lot of the times, and maybe his solutions, for example, in that Pikachu episode, Pikachu's Goodbye, which, by the way, when the first time I watched it, I remember as a kid just sobbing, and that music, it's the same sad music that they have in whenever throughout the series is a sad moment. And aww, yet it just hits so much harder than the montage. Oh my gosh. But in that Pikachu's Goodbye episode, Ash's solution to seeing Pikachu really happy and hearing from his friends just their thoughts was, I think, an immature way to go about it, especially since his Pikachu can kind of understand him from what we can gather, is to just let him go and not explain anything to him, really. He explained a little bit, but it's Pikachu didn't, I don't know. It seemed like he was running away to me from.
Yeah, right. It was feelings. Very much a 10-year-old boy's way of conceiving the world and addressing problems.
Right. No discussion. Just,
go. Just dramatic.
I'm sad. Yeah, I'm going to walk into the woods now. So also so seminally heartbreaking.
Right. It's also like, I'm remembering the Mewtwo movie. I forget what it's called, but it's the most iconic movie. But
Pokemon, the first movie.
Yes. Okay, great. Thank you. Perfect. But that's the one where Mewtwo tries to control a bunch of clone Pokemon and Ash and the team rescue them. So that was a really good, I guess, kind of metaphor too for the terror of having a controlling relationship with a Pokemon or pet or partner, whatever you want to call it, and how that can happen even from a human, but also a Pokemon as well, with the caveat that I think Mewtwo was created by humans, right? So it makes sense that he would adopt human characteristics, which might include the abuse of other Pokemon. So I thought that was really interesting that that was kind of like a learned habit, or at least a retaliatory revenge move against the humans who created him. So that again teaches us as the viewer to view control of a Pokemon as something that is bad and villainous and something that heroes should respond to.
Right. And Mewtwo is a really great study in that. And even just when engineering can go wrong and have dire consequences, because I think originally that movie or that Mewtwo was supposed to be the strongest Pokemon in the entire Pokemon
right,
world.
Right. So it is also a criticism of animal cloning and testing and DNA replication, all of that.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking on to like Mewtwo, he had a whole, is it a collection? But he just had like all these different Pokemon, cloned Pokemon with him. And I guess that brings me to this idea that it's not just Mewtwo. A lot of trainers in this universe are trying to collect Pokemon to advance their ambitions. And even the catchphrase, gotta catch them all, alludes to that, even though Ash doesn't collect all the Pokemon, obviously. But I think it's more of the marketing part of that, that everyone needs to collect all these Pokemon cards.
Right, of course.
There's this idea of collecting that benefits the company in that they get people to buy their things, but also I think in the psyche of viewers that these Pokemon are essentially part of this collection piece. No matter what the ideals are about friendship and harmony between humans and nature, that is still, it's an underlying tone to this whole show and series and games and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where we get to this discussion of property and ownership, wherein if you're collecting something, you're actively trying to collect and categorize a bunch of things. There's usually some sense of having owned the things that you're getting. So I, for example, have a shiny Snorlax Pokemon trading card. I just want to share that. But I'm just like, yeah, this is mine. I own this. This is my card. And I'm very proud of that fact. So that comes into play with this as well. And it bears a lot of similarity to things like menageries and zoos and all of these other human constructs, which are built to house and showcase animals and to showcase the effort of collecting and owning a piece of life that is of interest to other people.
Exactly. And I remember I still have my Pokemon card collection because I had a really hard time parting with that.
Same.
Yeah, but it's definitely this idea of collecting especially with animals, is not new, even just outside of this show. It's been a way for powerful people to establish this sense of power and prestige. And the pharaohs did this in ancient Egypt. There's this great story about Pablo Escobar and his hippos that are now causing problems. I don't know. Have you heard of that before?
No, yeah, I haven't.
So basically, Pablo Escobar, this drug kingpin, has this huge estate in Colombia, and he passed away, and he had zebras and giraffes and all these exotic animals as a collection. And his hippos that he had, which hippos, by the way, kill about 100 people a year. He has hundreds of these hippos, not even just in his property anymore. And now the Colombian government is struggling with figuring out what to do with these animals. They've been there for several decades now, and they've managed to deal with all the other animals, but the hippos have stayed and are causing problems and mayhem.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's like Tiger King and all the our whole obsession with the wild cat owners in the US, which why they exist is just beyond me. But there is some weird obsession we have with especially exotic animals. And we both know about like the exotic animal trade, of course, which flourishes a lot in Asia as well. But of course, in the US, apparently with wild cats, this obsession is fed maybe by content we watch when we're younger and our obsession with other cultures, perhaps. And that can develop into actual ownership of these animals in places that really makes no sense. And like, it can cause mayhem, exactly as you said, because these animals don't belong to the biome or environment that they're currently being housed.
Yeah, and it even goes beyond private collections to also zoos and aquariums, which unfortunately will some, depending on where they're from and what the laws are, often are part of this illegal exotic animal trade on a larger scale. And I don't think it's fair to blame Pokemon for this, because essentially it's not creating anything new. This is very much, like I said, an idea that has persisted within human history. It's just that this is a very phenomenon. It's been wider spread as a concept, yeah, because of how popular this show is. And maybe that's a look into, you know, our own psyches as right, like a population.
When you bring it back to the world of Pokemon, a lot of times you bring your Pokemon with you, you travel with them on your adventure, but then it's also unrealistic to be able to carry that many with you. So you have the PC. Have you ever played any of the games? You know, there's the PC where you store your extra Pokemon that are not worthy of being in your main party. And that's just crazy to me. It's like, you're basically storing it in a computer, which is like somehow, I don't know which is worse, moving a Pokemon or animal away from its intended environment and raising it in a completely random place, or storing it in a computer. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that concept is, I think, more of an ease of storytelling. But yes,
how, of course, yeah.
Right. I did play, okay, so this is me. I wasn't allowed to play video games growing up, or we were, yeah, if my sisters and I had a case. So we had lots of PowerPoint presentations to our parents about what we could put in, yeah, could do. We were like negotiating. Mm-hmm. And one of them was for the original Nintendo DS. And so
nice. That was my first console. Too.
Yeah, and I still have it. I still play it because, of course, electronics from back then just never die. Mm-hmm. And I've been playing the same game that I've never finished, which is Pokemon Pearl.
Oh, nice.
Never finished that game.
Oh, no.
I play it very, very slowly.
Amazing.
Yeah, but I know what you're talking about in terms of transporting the Pokemon.
Right.
It's some magic portal shit.
So when it comes to conservation, right, would you say that Pokemon promotes conservation and love of the environment? Like, how does the environment, because we talked a lot about Pokemon and pets specifically, but what about like the natural worlds that they come from?
Yeah, I think, I mean, as someone who was, for whom Pokemon was a part of my entertainment diet, the show, and I went on to go into environmental work, I do think there's some really compelling arguments for how this does promote a better connection between people and nature, if we're just talking about specifically what the show is teaching us. And let's look at the first episode. I think it's called Pokemon I Choose You. And Ash is going on this quest by himself, and he has a partner, which is Pikachu, and he needs to travel the world and go through these natural environments to catch a lot of these Pokemon. And that requires him sleeping outside. It requires him spending time not on a computer and actually observing and looking at the Pokemon, learning about the Pokemon around him, along with Brock and Misty, who are more knowledgeable about the topic.
Right.
And they go to cities and sometimes they catch Pokemon, but really they have to be away from the city and out in less populated areas to catch the Pokemon that are going to help them the most. As a con, then we start thinking about how this translates to the real world. Despite what the show is telling us, this is one of the most successful cross-platform properties where they're getting people to watch the shows, which has to be in front of a computer or a TV, and playing games, which has to be in front of a console or with some kind of device that is part of the isolation of us from the natural environment a lot of the times.
Right.
So then there's that dichotomy. Oh yeah, and there's an article, a Verge article. They basically say that there's a tension between yearning for nature and a desire to contain it. I think this quote summarizes the two opposing parts of this entire property and the contradiction between it.
Yeah, and that's what makes Pokemon Go so amazing too, because it bridges that gap. There's a really good quote from the CEO of Niantic. They're the company that made Pokemon Go. So their CEO, John Hank, he had this really great quote, and this is kind of in response to the metaverse created by Facebook and just general talk about virtual reality and Pokemon Go being it's called AR, which is sort of like virtual reality, but maybe not as immersive. But he basically says that a lot of people these days seem very interested in bringing this near future version of a virtual world to life, including some of the biggest names in technology and gaming. And he says, we believe at Niantic, we can use technology to lean into the reality of augmented reality, encouraging everyone, ourselves included, to stand up, walk outside, and connect with people and the world around us. This is what we humans are born to do, the result of 2 million years of human evolution. And as a result of those are the things that make us the happiest. Technology should be used to make these core human experiences better, not to replace them. So basically he's saying that things like virtual reality or AR should be used to help propel us outward and to explore the world more, as opposed to withdrawing inward and retreating back to our computer or console screens, which is what the original Pokemon games did until Pokemon Go came out, which as I'm sure most of our listeners know, brings Pokemon into the real world. You have the real world sort of augmented to include Pokemon in it, and you have to capture Pokemon by literally walking outside. So I think it's brilliant how that game has eased some of the tension that you mentioned precisely, which is this interest in the outside world inspired by these games, but that keeps us trapped inside.
Yeah, I think Pokemon Go is an interesting example because in some ways it has definitely brought more people outside. I never really got into it, to be honest, but I really struggle with walking and being on my phone at the same time. Doing two things at once can be kind of difficult with me.
I've literally walked into polls before. I totally relate.
Oh yeah, it happens. That's the thing with Pokemon Go, is that there were times, especially when it's not so congested, that it seems like there was such a benefit for a Pokemon Go. And there's this article called Pokemon Go: Benefits, Costs, and Lessons for the Conservation Movement. This article is a free article on Wiley Library. So it just makes the case that there's a lot of, if we look at Pokemon Go as a model of getting more people involved with the natural environment through this augmented reality, there are some pros, which include getting them outside, and then cons where people can get so focused on the game itself that they don't notice how they're interacting with the environment. Like if everyone is stomping on this grassy land that essentially can, if everyone's traipsing around it, it can ruin that plot of land for the animals and the plants, you know, but also how Pokemon Go can be used as a model for citizen science, engaging people. And citizen science is something that I really gravitate towards. And are you familiar with citizen science as like a concept?
A little bit, but if you could explain it, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's just this idea of utilizing people as a way to collect data about what's going on around them. There are citizen science projects about plastics where people can report the amount of plastics that they see, the types of plastics. In terms of Pokemon Go, this has been used to help hydrologists, so people who study water and the way that rivers flow. Hi, jumping in really quick. What I'm referring to here is a Colorado citizen science project called Stream Tracker, and I learned about it through an NPR article by Ray Ellen Bitchell. It's called How Pokemon Inspired a Citizen Science Project to Monitor Tiny Streams. All right, back to the podcast. they were struggling because Google Maps will track the largest rivers, but they won't track the small, tiny streams that come off those rivers. And that's actually how a lot of the land around it receives its water, not from the big river. And so people playing Pokemon Go were actually able to report where they saw these small streams. And that helped the hydrologist figure out how to map these areas and help them with their own studies in terms of conservation. So there's a lot of potential in this, let's say, that we can learn from.
Yeah. I think you bring up some really good points about some of the, but also upsides to Pokemon Go. Other downsides that I can think of are also just the way that it contributes to this commodification of Pokemon that we've talked about a little bit before. For example, when you start the game, you get to pick one of your starters, right? Between Charmander, Bulbasaur, and Squirtle. I picked Charmander just to be special. There's nothing special about this Charmander, and you don't even have to keep it with you the whole time. I ended up transferring mine because there was nothing unique about it, and I needed more of its candies to power up this other better Charmander that I have. But it's just a really good example of the value of Pokemon and Pokemon Go is much different than in the original games. In the original games, most of the time, I mean, some people try to catch as many as possible, but most of the time you just catch one Pokemon once and that's the one that you get. But in Pokemon Go, you can have hundreds of Charmanders and just transfer a bunch of them to get your candies, and each Pokemon has a value of 3 candies. So there's just this little, there's almost a currency or monetization of each Pokemon that you have. And that automatically just removes this sense of friendship and depth that you may have for a specific Pokemon, because it can easily just be replaceable. So that was one of my issues with the game. As much as I love it though, I played for many years. I was a very dedicated player beyond its original craze, and I opened it today and really had a great time. So I do love the game, but that is one thing that I appreciated less, because it was just much less personal than I feel the other games were. Even to this day, some of my old consoles, I would refuse to delete my files. Even if I wanted to play, I would have such a hard time deleting my file to start a new game, because I had such a strong emotional attachment to the Pokemon in my party from that game. But with Pokemon Go, it's much different. But on the other hand, you know, a lot of people talk about how Pokemon Go, especially that summer that it was really popular, got them outside, reduced anxiety, reduced depression, increased social engagement. Actually, there's this super interesting article. It's called A Pilot Investigation of the Physical and Psychological Benefits of Playing Pokemon Go for Dog Owners. And basically they found through this study, Pokemon Go players who also had dogs. In the study, they found that 43.2% of respondents reported an increased amount of time spent with family / household members, and 52.3% reporting they spent more time with their dog. And additionally, 62.9% of participants reported spending more time walking their dog since starting to play the game. So that's really interesting, because we talk about the similarities between Pokemon and pets, and this was a direct correlation that the idea of having this game got people outside and got people to pay more attention to their pets and bring them along for the ride, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I wonder too, wouldn't that also create this dependency on, maybe not create, but it encourages this dependency on a console or a device to get people physically outside and engaged when, I don't know,
Right. I'm reading out the best way to do it, but it's also better than the alternative, which was not going outside at all. I can speak personally to this. The summer it came out, I was working on campus at my college, and I didn't have that many friends who were also staying that summer. So I would just hang around and watch TV or read in my dorm room. But when this game came out, let me tell you, I was out on the streets every single day after work. My legs were genuinely more muscular, I swear.
Nice.
But it was like the best summer of my life. I actually met friends and made friends through it. And the same happened when I was living in Hong Kong as well. Some of my friends were friends that I just would go play the game with. And that's just how we maintained our friendship. So yes, it was a dependency. Would I have gone out as much without the game? No. But was my life still better as a result? Definitely.
I like that. I like hearing that perspective. I think there's another way we can think about this in terms of Pokemon and how it has affected our brains in terms of identifying species of Pokemon. You know what I'm saying? Like the different kinds of Pokemon that there are. So there was a study that looked into how people were able to associate different images, and people who played the Pokemon game between the ages of 5 and 8, and this is them being tested as adults, they had particular parts of the brain similar to each other that was activated when they recognized a Pokemon, which which they didn't see in people who didn't play the game at that age. And this isn't so strange because we do see clusters of neurons that will develop in association of a particular stimuli, but it speaks to this ability of people who watch the show to be able to identify Pokemon more easily than other actual native animals that we see. I mean, I know for myself, even though I do spend a lot of time studying actual animals and plants, it is much easier for me to identify a Pokemon. Like, it's just faster and I can do it more accurately, right? I think off the top of my head.
Yeah, that reminds me of this time I was playing, I think, Heads Up, which is kind of like Taboo. Have you ever played it? Right. The one where you put on your forehead. So I was playing that with a friend in high school. And I think some teacher was watching us play, but the category was Pokemon. And we were rapid fire, able to get through like 50 of them in a minute. It was scary. And the teacher was just watching us like we were crazy, just looking at us like we were nuts, and said, like, imagine all the other knowledge you could have stored in your brain, like in the space that's dedicated to just Pokemon. And I was like, that's so right. The number of Pokemon I can just rattle off the names of that could have been used for, I don't know, math formulas or something, I guess that's more traditionally useful. But it is crazy just how much the repetition of playing that game and absorbing yourself in the world in so many different forms, it's like learning an entirely different language. It's literally like if our parents had put us onto like Spanish language shows or something like that, we would be fluent in Spanish, but we're fluent in Pokemon.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And to be fair to us as fans, Pokemon are much simpler to identify than a lot of other species because of it's a cartoon. It's simplified. We do have so much faster knowledge. And I think that goes to the success of the property as a whole to get. But this is years after we first watched this show. So it makes me think a lot about how this founder and the people who work on this can say that there's this inspiration from nature. But I can't help but think that ultimately this is a property that has benefited so much from capitalizing on a want of people to connect to nature. And yet it feels like such a contradiction to me.
Right. It's definitely complicated, but at the very least, it does generate some conversation, I would hope, based around how much it promotes conservation versus not, how much it promotes going outside versus staying inside on your consoles. But I think we can at least say that it has definitely inspired more of an interest, I think, in animals at least, and the very different types of species, but also their relationship with the environment. And I do think that Nintendo has done a better job of responding to these conflicts and encouraging people to go outside and also to befriend their Pokemon and invest more time and friendship into their Pokemon overall through those different methods that I shared earlier, through Pokemon Go, through things like I forget what it's called. There's like a Pokemon Watch where you can walk your Pokemon virtually by making steps or whatever. So they are creating more unique ways. So I think close the gap that we've mentioned, but I also want to relate it a little bit to climate change, which is I expect where we're eventually heading. But something that was super interesting is that in the Pokemon Sword and Shield games, which are one of the newer games, they have kind of new variants of virginal Pokemon that look a little bit different or sometimes have different types. And that indicates how Pokemon are sort of evolve and change depending on their environment. So for example, there's a Vulpix that's an ice type in, I think it's this game, or maybe Alola. I think it's Alola, but just basically saying how Pokemon are affected by the environment, which is the same as animals in the real world. But in Sword and Shield, they have a Pokemon called Corsola, which is in the earlier games. And I think it's just a basic water type coral looking Pokemon. But in the Galarian Sword and Shield game, it's actually ghost type as well, to represent literally the dead coral that we are seeing all over the world, which is quite honestly pretty harsh.
Wow.
But yeah, and you can look it up. It's pretty interesting to look at. Like, a child who's very familiar, as we were, with the different types of Pokemon might stop and look at that and be like, why did they make that choice? What can I learn from this about maybe the real animals that these Pokemon are inspired by?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I haven't played really any of the new games. So that's really interesting, because I've heard from other people as well who are saying, oh, you like to learn about environmental issues and evolution and things like that, you should play the new Pokemon games. And I that's really interesting in terms of educating people on the role of climate change. And even, I mean, even in the shows originally, there were some ecological concepts that were taught throughout the show, including the importance of having like zones that are not for people to catch, to reserve those areas for the Pokemon themselves. And I remember Corsola. Misty had a Corsola.
Did she? Yeah. Yeah. So she did. The Galarian version is like this really sad, silvery white one. It's pretty depressing.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And so how do you get to help them in any way? Or is that just...
I don't remember. It's possible. Yeah, it's been a while since I played. But yeah, my understanding is that it's just kind of part of the story and the world. But maybe there was a side mission that I didn't know about. Who knows?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of cool. Like, as sad as that is, but to imbue that into the game itself.
Right.
It sparks thought. But I wonder whether the game itself has explicitly talks about it. Cause I imagine when you're younger playing these games, whether you would even think to question it, especially if you have heard in real life that these things are happening, kind of accepting that as a reality, as opposed to wondering whether
it
could be better.
Yeah. Right. There's always a level to the engagement that they have. Obviously, it's very easy to just redesign the Pokemon slightly by changing its color, but are you actively engaging with the source issue that you're relating to by making the player engage with it in some way? Probably not as much. And so again, that's the responsibility that falls on game developers to actually make these issues more playable and more interactive than just design.
Okay, so I want to take this opportunity, since we are talking about conservation, climate change, to highlight two sources that I hope people who like Pokemon will look into. And one of them is called Philo. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Philo is a card game that was designed. It's open source. And this is a project that was started several years back to try to engage people in this Pokemon card-like game, where it's actually teaching you about real animals and real plants, and also the challenges they face conservation-wise.
That's super cool.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to check that out, they can go to philogame.org. That's Philo as in Philo. And the second one, which I've used before, which is called iNaturalist, that's an app that you can download. Basically, you can take photos of plants and animals that you see and upload it, and then have a discussion with people about how to identify it. It also goes into the database so that there's a storage of information about where these sightings are seen, and the plants, sorry, I keep saying animals. And so that's an example of citizen science that if people do want to get engaged in, I would definitely recommend checking out iNaturalist. And the website is iNaturalist.org.
That's also super cool. It reminds me of this board game that I really like called Wingspan, which is, I think it's about bird watching, but also bird habitat building. But basically there's a ton of different cards, and each of them have different birds on it. And it reminds you of Pokemon cards because they have like different stats, their height and the amount of eggs I think that they can carry or birth at one point, and they each have different abilities, and you play these different bird cards to build your habitat of birds and then try to get points. But that's super interesting. I really like that there's a sort of gamification happening with the natural world, and I hope that it continues to inspire interest in issues that face us like climate change and conservation, and hopefully inspire people to not just, you know, stick to their consoles, but branch out and relate that love of Pokemon to animals as well.
Yeah, and I think of this, what I mentioned, and Pokemon as well, as tools. Because one of the biggest hurdles that we have towards big climate change action is people's disconnect from their natural environments. Because of the way that we live in the cities and how so much of our food and the things that we use in our daily lives come from other places, and we're just disconnected from these supply chains. And where does our food come from? Where does our water come from? All these different things. And if these games and these sources that I shared can help people go outside and check it out a little bit. Like, this is an ongoing thing that I'm trying to get involved with as well, even through my work. Like, let's just do it. Let's just try, and let's do it together.
Get out there. Catch them all.
Get out there. And oh, but about that catchphrase, did you know? So when the show Indigo League first aired, it was not allowed in Switzerland until they took out the slogan, gotta catch them all.
Really?
Because they don't allow marketing in their children's TV programs. So they felt that slogan was, I mean, and it is part of the marketing of trying to get people to play to collect the trading cards, which is why it wasn't allowed.
Oh, I see. Okay. I wonder if they've revised that now that so many things have that kind of slogan or marketing.
Yeah. So all these fun trivia. So speaking of which, Sonia, hot takes, Easter eggs.
Yes, I'm really excited.
About anything.
Yeah.
What's yours?
So have you heard of Pokemon Black and Blue?
Nope. Is it a game? Because that would explain why I haven't heard of it.
It is a game, but not what you would think. So you know what PETA is, right? People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Yeah. Okay.
So PETA has kind of this ongoing feud with the Pokemon universe, and obviously because they associate it with the unethical treatment or abuse of animals, and they believe that it promotes that. So PETA actually has created several parody games that are really gruesome, I will say. I watched some playthroughs of them. It's really horrifying, but parody games that parody real games that have something to do with animals. So Pokemon Black and Blue is their Pokemon parody, in which you are basically this abused Pokemon who is trying to free other abused Pokemon. And in this world, any Pokemon who has a trainer is abused. There's absolutely no nuance or gray area. It's a very black and white world. So the actual attacking or battling is you as a Pokemon attacking humans or trainers who have Pokemon. And instead of, obviously in the normal games, you defeat the Pokemon and you catch it, right, by throwing a ball. But in this game, you defeat the human and free its Pokemon, who then just willingly joins your team of Pokemon who are, I guess, abused recoverers. It is gruesome. All the Pokemon have these bruises or scratches or bandages on them to, I guess, indicate the abuse that they've suffered. Other similar games that PETA has released are Cooking Mama, Mama Kills Animals, Mario Kills Tanuki, and Pokemon Black and Blue. And the catchphrase for Pokemon Black and Blue is "Gotta free them all."
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Okay,
it is nuts. It's highly disturbing, along with, you know, many of their marketing campaigns as they historically have been. But definitely recommend just kind of checking it out if you can, because it is really insightful into, you know, what PETA thinks Pokemon is. And while I get kind of where they're coming from, I do think it is a really harsh oversimplification of what Pokemon is. And I don't think that they're succeeding with, you know, changing anyone's mind by portraying Pokemon in this way.
Yeah, I do remember reading into it a little bit, because there was an issue about how PETA made their offices Pokemon Go free zones, and how that was a big thing, even though I don't feel like it was that big a deal. Anyway.
No. I remember that
who
too.
Who knows? Yeah, maybe there are PETA fans out there who are mad at us, but Black and Blue makes sense now.
Yes. That. Yeah, you get it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be really gruesome. I remember seeing photos of it, but I haven't actually seen any of the playthroughs. Okay, so my fun fact thing is voice acting, and I'll throw in a little arcane one too, just because I remembered it now. But so in the English dub, Misty and Jessie have the same voice actress, which blew my mind.
What? Wait, what?
Yeah, they're
what?
Both
their voices
playing...
are so different.
That's what I thought. I can't even, you know, sometimes you can, there are a lot of voice actors and actresses that play multiple characters even within the same show. And usually you can kind of hear the similarities. This person, her name is Rachel Lillis. And yeah, she played Misty and Jessie. And go listen to the dubs. I think you'll have a hard time like us. I really, even knowing that and rewatching the shows, I was like, I can't hear it. I'm so impressed. It's like Grey Delisle in Avatar, that her ability to change her voice is pretty crazy.
Yeah, she's amazing. She was Azula, right? Am I thinking of,
Yeah, she was Azula, and then in Korra, she was Rava, I think her name was.
Mm.
That spirit, the embodiment of good energy spirit. Oh, and then before I forget, the arcane tidbit is actually, I should have put this last episode, but do you know who voiced Caitlin?
No.
That is our friend, Scottish actress, Katie Leung, who played Cho Chang.
I did know that. I saw that when I was looking up. I was like, what? Yeah, that is so cool. Good for her.
Yeah,
honestly,
yeah.
They did Cho dirty in Harry Potter. She had like so little involvement and role in the story. So I'm glad she got to shine through Caitlin, because Caitlin's a much better character.
Yeah, I feel the same. Yeah. And thanks everyone again, as always, for joining us. We do have a few notes before we go today. First of all is on our SoundCloud platform, just in case anyone listens through there. Because of the way that the platform is, we will have to rotate the episodes so that only the last two or three episodes will be available at a time. So if you do want to hear an older episode, we would recommend going on to any of the other platforms to listen.
Yeah. Find us elsewhere anyway.
And don't forget, you can send us questions or, you know, paragraphs, but try to keep it short. And we may feature you on our next episode. Okay. Yeah. Bye.
Thanks for joining us on Cartoon Revolution. Episodes drop the first week of every month on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and most other major podcast platforms.
Follow us on Instagram at cartoonrevolution.pod. That's cartoonrevolution.pod.
Tell us what you're watching and share your hot takes with us. Music is from The Musical Ghost. See you next time.
See you soon. Mwah.